Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the topic today of God, the Preserver of Man. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining us. I'll begin today with the morning prayer.
This is a watch prayer for the whole household on page 110 of Collectania. All is love, peace, and harmony. Heaven is right here. Truth reigns. There is no strife. Love has destroyed all hate. All is peace. Love and joy. Run and not be weary. The need of the hour is simplicity, meekness, and obedience. Beloved Father, Mother, God, give me wisdom to meet all the problems that may have to be met today. Give me understanding to rebuke error and moral courage to speak the truth. Give me grace to remain silent when not necessary to speak. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All right, our watch for today, Karen.
Watch number 472. Watch that you realize that Jesus' statement, quote, give and it shall be given unto you, end quote, is a law that carries with it the power of enforcement. To obey it with right motives means to exercise it, and hence to experience its promise.
Okay, comments? Thank you, Karen.
You're welcome. I love this story in the Bible. The key to this watch is with right motives, to give with right motives. If we give with any sense of expecting anything in return, of recognition or pride, or we've put a barrier between us and all the endless, infinite possibilities of what would come to us. But if we give with any wrong motive, it will separate us from the good. The story this week is, a widow woman doesn't seem to have anything. What does she have to give? But the law it's a beautiful sense of how this law operates. When to all appearances, it looks like I have nothing to give. What do I have to give? And yet. Anyway, the right motives have to be right.
Thank you. Yes. It's not human do-goodies we talk about. We need to be impelled just by love, with a capital L, compassion, love. Yeah, not because we're feeling humanly responsible or, yes, expecting a return. Someone commented to me recently, who comes from an atheist country and observed people in our church. And, you know, she wondered how come we always are giving and we don't really expect anything in return. And she said, well, that just must be Christian. And I said, yes, it is Christian. And I just heard this most beautiful story. It was about a famous, I guess, a soccer player, European soccer player, football player, I guess they call it. I don't follow it. I think his name was Ronaldo or something. I'm not even sure what country he was from. But he talked about how he lived in poverty as a child and would be practicing with his friends, soccer, out on the streets. But around midnight or so, they would go to McDonald's looking for food, you know, that was thrown out. And that there was a woman that worked there that was often there, and she would come out with hamburgers and French fries and soda for them. And they couldn't believe how kind she was. Every time they went, she would come out with this for them. And he said years and years later, when he was driving past the street, he saw this woman sitting at a cafe outside, and he was just, that's her. That's that woman. And he stopped and he found out who she was, and he paid for a lunch. But not only did he pay for a lunch, he bought her a house and a car because he had plenty of money to do that. And he said he would never forget that kindness. And she said, oh, you know, what are you doing? She said, I only gave you hamburgers and French fries. And he said, you gave me much more. You gave me hope. It's such a beautiful story. We'll have to put it on the news thing. So and he said that you can tell what a good man he was. He said that was worth more to him than all the accolades and everything that he's getting now that I guess he's very famous and makes a lot of money. So she gave the true sense of giving. And boy, did it come back. Took years later, but it's a beautiful story. Anyone else?
Yeah, I think a lot of the, you know, these famous ball, you know, soccer or whatever, they've done a lot for other people. But one thing I learned about giving is so beautiful that you give with a motive that you are given because that person is a child of God and does not lack. And that shows your motive for giving. It really impressed me. The thought behind the giving is so important. And it has impressed me since for a long, long time that you give with the thought that because the person is a child of God, they cannot lack either. And that really does help in changing things around.
It's beautiful, yes, because if you give because, oh, you poor thing, and, you know, you're
right.
Miserable, then that's not a blessing. That's not seeing them correctly. And it is a feeling maybe even of superiority over them. But no, you see them as a child of God. Thank you very much. Good point.
And I have a story about giving, if I can. You know, it's not always money. I remember when I was in college as a freshman and I played the saxophone, and the lead saxophonist was having trouble with the solo. And I was a better player than she was, and I knew exactly how to teach her. So I said, stay behind and I'll show you. You can do this. She was thinking she couldn't do it. And so I did, just because I wanted to help her. Just, you know, so that's the motive that you're talking about. I just wanted to help her. And then lo and behold, later that week, the leader called me in and he said that she wanted to step down and have me be first year. So as a freshman, I got to be first year, but I did it with a pure motive. And so there are lots of ways of giving.
That's very true. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just a smile can be a form of giving mm-hmm. when it's needed. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I think Bruce? Can we also give because it's God's nature to give, and we're a reflection of God's nature. He's the one who makes the sun shine on the righteous and the unrighteous alike. So we just do it because he does it.
Thank you. Yes. Very good.
And you do it because he motivates you to do it. And you don't cast your pearls before swine. Remember that.
Well, this is a beautiful watching point. And in some degree, it kind of like tells a story of my life because it lifts you out of this sense of discouragement where you're thinking like you've got nothing to give or nothing to, and always trying to get by. But this church found me at a point in time when I was in a low point, but it taught me that, yes, I do have something to offer, and I can do some things to glorify God and be helpful and useful And it was at the time I thought, oh my gosh, New Jersey is the land of opportunity. Until I learned later that the divine mind is the land of opportunity. But I also found out from experience that if I did this gratefully and graciously, and the motivation we just mentioned before, to glorify God, it opens up the door to opportunities and blessings, because that's the way the law of God works. So that's my comment on this.
Thank you.
Even giving forgiveness. You know, if you don't think you don't have one thing of this world to give, and maybe you look around, but is there anybody you have to forgive? Anyone, anywhere, forgiveness or non-judgmental. I mean, that's also a form of giving. And that just, whatever form it is, it just lifts one's thought Godward, heavenward. And then you just sort of get and then you start finding more ways and more ways. But you just have to find that one. There's got to be something somewhere I can give just sitting here. And forgiveness is one thing that we all can do because we are God's children and we have to see us. But that's also a form of giving.
Thank you very much. I've been reading an article recently. We've talked about virtue medicine. This one's called Five Virtues That Directly Influence Your Health. And this one is particularly, it's based on ancient Chinese medicine. By ancient, I'm talking about maybe thousands of years old. Some of it is just very much plain common sense, as the virtue medicine articles are. But this one article spoke about a psychology professor, and he had decades-long resentment toward his mother. And he believed his feelings were justified, so he let them remain. But then he also was experiencing chronic anxiety, depression, insomnia, and all other kinds of things. So he was given a prescription, I guess by a Chinese
traditional.
Yes, traditional. To silently recite the word forgive each time resentment surfaced. So every time he was feeling resentful, he said the word forgive. And after a time, all these problems left him. And it says, you know, perhaps you have prone to a hot temper. Well, then say the word to yourself, compassion. Compassion. Say the healing word. It was an interesting article, and it mentions about various organs in your body and how they respond to these positive truths. And when you're resentful, chronically anxious, depressed, it clogs up the functions. So they're not working normally and naturally as they should when you let love flow through you, as we learn in Christian Science. It also said something interesting about how at birth the mothers are given something divine for the child. The child starts out with just a divine, everything perfect in them. And we know that too. I thought that was beautiful. And then they learn other things. But originally, and I do feel, you know, the little babies, their innocence, and fall out of the bosom of God. So it made some interesting points. It also said how important it is that you keep a proper schedule. Your body is the temple of the living God. It didn't say that, but I am. And it mentions, you know, people who stay up till 2 or 3 in the morning working, and then sleep late or eat, and then eat greasy, awful food and fill their thoughts, you know, not with good food, maybe not with good TV or news or whatever. And then they end up clogging their system, so to speak. So take care of yourself. You're the temple of the living God, and have a good, normal life where you wake up early and eat properly and go to bed at the right time.
Exercise.
Yeah, get a proper amount of exercise. Don't just be sitting in your chair all the time. This isn't good. And as a Christian Scientist, I've seen people that seem almost proud. Well, like, you know, I can do all this and it's fine. Well, maybe, but maybe not. Bruce?
So true. I mean, it's practical and common sense. Please take care of yourself.
Yes.
Because, you know, you glorify God with your body and your spirit, which are God's. Think of that. Both your body and your spirit are God's. So have a,
thank you,
a certain degree of respect for what God has entrusted you with.
Lawrence? I feel most important for me is keeping my thought clear. What kind of thoughts I hold is most important, really. I mean, all these things are, yes, absolutely, they influence the physical, but really, in the end, is what I'm holding in my thinking.
Well, and that is true. And as you hold these right thoughts in your thinking, you will naturally do these things because it will come naturally. And now, if you had to stay up till 3 a.m, if you had to eat McDonald's every day or whatever, then if you had to, then of course you could do it without harm to yourself. But just generally speaking, we need to be wise about ourselves. But yes, of course, it's always your thought. And
the important part of that sentence from Mrs. Eddy is if without sin.
Yes.
If you're full of wrong thinking and then you're like, oh, I'm just going to treat myself like a garbage disposal, that's not going to work well for you. I know this from experience.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Jeremy speaks from experience because his lifestyle had not been good and he's totally changed it as he grew in science. And he dropped away the bad habits. Right.
And it is, I have found too, I think one of the last things that I have been working on is not staying up so late. And I have found when I get to bed earlier, I'm just like naturally more joyful. I do not have to like really work to be joyful. I just wake up joyful and not just joyful to do the work, which is what I had before. Just in a general sense, joyful, happy to be here.
I know I read where Mrs. Eddy, you know, she'd sleep. When she slept, she would sleep like a baby. But then she would wake up maybe in the middle of the night and work for a few hours and then go back to sleep. Yeah. So she was divinely authorized in working under God's care and love. And of course, her thought was right. And she was doing work for God. But I'm talking about, you know, being willful and stressed and overworked and just allowing yourself to live that way, which isn't God's plan.
So it's not so much what hours you go to sleep, it's what are you restful? Are you peaceful?
Yes.
Because sometimes you have to be awake until what time, but overall, are you restful? That's to me. Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Many times, and certainly as a practitioner, you have to keep odd hours, but in doing God's work, yes, and Mrs. Eddy says that in Science and Health that being with
mind
God
rests
is
in action.
Yes,
mind rests in action. Yeah. Mind rests in action.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And there are many people who don't require much sleep at all. So, and that's good. You shouldn't. You shouldn't be one of these people requiring it either. That's not God's plan. But I'm just saying because I've seen it. People are not taking right care of themselves, and it's not good.
Exercise doesn't have to be a lot. Because
no.
For me, I had to build it up slowly, and then just a little walking or stretching or going
Absolutely.
Up and downstairs. It can be or in your chair, but do something.
Do something.
And work up.
Yes. I read Mrs. Eddy at Pleasant View. She would walk up and down in climate weather. She'd walk around the porch. You know, she had a big veranda porch that she would walk on. And other times she'd walk out in her gardens. And of course, we know Jesus walked for miles. So this isn't about following health rules. Please don't misinterpret me. It's by being naturally, just as Bruce said, body and soul taking care of it. Thank you.
Just, Tim, but I just wanted to add the thing from John Leaf Whittier, the hymn 49 about, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace. And that's part of our ordered lives, is having proper schedules and so forth.
Thank you. So that's one of my favorite hymns, if not, and take from us now the strain and stress, and let our ordered lives confess the beauty of thy peace. A natural rhythm, the rhythm of God. If it gets interrupted for a good reason, that's fine, and everything will be fine, but not to just push oneself willfully. All right, we have a beautiful lesson with so many psalms in it. Every good psalm, 91, 23, 46, 121, you name it, it's there.
55, my goodness.
Yes, yep, everyone we love. So, Shardy, I'll let you start with what you found on the 91st psalm.
In God the Preserver of Man, in response to reading the 91st psalm, I found notes from a Tabitha Rayo from England. She's really a minister. Quote, "We live in difficult times with many people unsettled as a result of the things going on around them. This is why the psalmist's invitation in this psalm is very relevant today. He invites us to make the Most High our dwelling and to live in the shadow of the Almighty. Indeed, those names by which the psalmist calls God are instructive to us. As the Most High, God is higher than any terrifying heights this world may threaten us with. And as the Almighty, He's got power over anything that we may face on this side. In the Psalms, God repeatedly invites us to find our hope, salvation, and refuge in Him. It is all about dwelling in safety and security. When we are tired, afraid, or sad, we all want a place to go where we can find rest and peace. When we feel lonely, we need a shelter, and we all need our safe places. We can take refuge in the presence of the Lord, knowing that nothing can separate us from God's love. A refuge is a place of safety and protection. And like the psalmist, we certainly can trust God's faithfulness. We can rejoice, even amid our difficulties, by simply acknowledging the truth that absolutely nothing can separate us from the love of God. That's Romans 8. Apostle Paul says, I consider that the suffering of this present time, the sufferings of this present time, are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. Romans 8. Charles Spurgeon said about Psalm 91, quote, in the whole collection, there is not a more cheering psalm, end quote. He added, quote, if you can take this psalm into your soul, it will cheer you so much that nothing can pull you down for very long, end quote. As followers of Christ, even in the midst of bad times and uncertainties, we can constantly feel the joyful presence of God. Corrie ten Boom once said, never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God, end quote. While we continue to see unprecedented things across the nations of the world and get absolutely puzzled by all that is changing at such a rapid pace, we can be of good cheer by remembering that our lives are in God's hands and He is able both to comfort us in our pains and to deliver us even unto eternal life.
Thank you. It just shows that 91st Psalm, is there any problem it doesn't meet? It meets all problems. every problem is in that psalm. And Mrs. Eddy thought so highly of it. And one time she did give a sermon on it, and for some reason it wasn't recorded, but sure, that was amazing. And what we do have, that beautiful one by Bliss Knapp, and which, as Karen has recorded on audio, but he starts out, the 91st Psalm is one of the greatest chapters of the Bible. Like the rest of the scriptures, the underlying thought is developed through a series of symbols, and it is by the appreciation of the values lying behind these symbols that the power of this prayer is understood. The 91st Psalm is one of the most powerful prayers ever written. Persons have gotten themselves out of every conceivable kind of trouble by working on this prayer every day in a spiritual way. Others have turned to this psalm in some great emergency and overcome their difficulties. The best way to get the most out of this psalm is to read it through quietly, pause after each verse to consider the meaning. Prayer is thinking about God. And while working on this prayer in the study, you are praying in a spiritual way. If in specific trouble or fearful, after reading this psalm several times, your fears will be gone. So truly, for those of you with troubles, you know, that seem to don't go or whatever, these psalms are so powerful. The 23rd Psalm too. There's another story of someone ill and getting the prescription, if you will. This was from his minister to work with the 23rd Psalm 5 times a day, lunchtime, breakfast time, dinner time, and before he goes to bed. And to think of it, think what it means, take it in. And that person was also healed. There's power in these words. Just like we spoke of last week about the power of the word. Mm-hmm. Carrie sent me a beautiful, I guess it was a testimony about someone who, well, she couldn't really accept the words. And then she remembered as a little child, her parents telling her to go into a dark room, which she was afraid to do. But she said, okay, well, my parents are telling me to do it. So she went into the dark room and everything was fine. And she took that into this experience now. We have the word here, the Bible, the word of the Bible, the word of science and health. Are you going to accept it? It is our Father, Mother, God talking to you. Are you going to believe the truth of it? Are you going to stand afraid of going into the dark room? No, you go forward, fearless, because your Father, Mother, God is with you. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is partly why I like that book, Tala Takumi, so much, because here she was born deformed. There was no hope for her. She was going to be that way all her life. She got signs and health. She accepted it. She said, this is it. And she was healed. So there's nothing, I don't care what you think you have, there is nothing that God can't heal. Okay, Florence.
I think we have to remember Mrs. Evans's interpretation of the 91st Psalm too. That's very, very, very comforting us as well.
Yes, that's a...
I know we have it on the website. Mm-hmm.
Do, yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
In the Bliss Knapp, we have to remember... Oh,
go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
That when we're saying the words and thinking of, it's not the words, it's what the words do to our thinking. If we are pondering these words, these psalms, which are so beautiful, what it's really doing to us is opening our thought to be receptive to the voice of God. Because a book of word, you know, even just a book can't do anything to heal you. But it's the words I'm learning that the words are opening. The truth is opening our thought to hear God's voice, that still small voice, And like Bicknell Young says in his article, then you get this feeling, this click, and that's where the change takes place. But it's the thoughts and the words in that open our thought, are receptive, make us receptive to hear God's voice, because that's where the power is.
Thank you. Anyone else? In the Bliss Map, and I've quoted this before, but it's so beautiful, where it's talking about the angels. He shall give his angels charge over thee to keep thee in all thy ways. This is another lovely promise. Read it again and again. Nothing could be more exquisite. He shall give his angels charge over thee. This is meant for you and me. Make this promise the subject of your thought every day. For a month, think about it, realize it, charge over thee. Think of this promise. Charge over thee. Your whole life will be changed. You will be uplifted. You are in charge of the angels and will be safe, guarded in all ways, health, food, clothing, all the necessities of life. And then I looked up that word charge, command given in the name of God, to give instruction to instruct or authoritatively to the person or thing, angel committed to another's care, custody, or management, a trust, to assume control, care, and protection. So just think of that. You know, we think of so many things. Let's think of the good things that are going on. And Nancy has that story about her as a child, right? The hymn that helped you, right?
Oh, yes.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I have so many stories about hymn 9.
About the angel.
Oh, yes. I used to have a fear of dogs. And growing up, I had to walk myself to school. And I would sing, I walk with God along the way, and that his angels are with me. And, you know, I did encounter a few dogs, but they did not even come near me. I was protected, just knowing God's angels were with me all the time. I walk with the angels. I could feel their presence, and it really did give me peace, because I yes. seemed to, in the past, attract all of the stray dogs. They would be coming, you know, barking and chasing me, and it was really a wonderful experience.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All the hymns, really. I, as a child, they got me through a lot of things.
Yes. The angels that come and comfort, guard, and guide.
Yes, yes. I'm sorry. I couldn't pull that. Yeah.
Comfort, guard, and guide. He sends his angels to your side mm-hmm. to comfort, guard, and guide.
Yeah.
They're always there. So instead of listening to the negative chatter, think about what's with you, what's present with you. Think of that Psalm 91. I'm going to switch briefly to something I wanted to comment on. Last week, Gary mentioned something being from the Communist Manifesto about Christian Science. Well, Tony corrected it, right, and said it wasn't the Communist Manifesto, and I don't believe I've ever read it. But years ago, we got an article or a pamphlet called Brainwashing, a Synthesis of Russian Textbook on Psychopolitics. And psychopolitics, the art and science of asserting and maintaining dominion over the thoughts and loyalties of individuals, officers, bureaus, and masses, and the effecting of the conquest of enemy nations through, and this is, quote, mental healing. It's not mental healing. It's mental malpractice. And in that book, which is a very interesting book, and you probably should have it, I know David Keeston sells it.
It is on the website.
It is on the website, yes. It does mention Christian Science, to get rid of Christian Scientists, to make us seem like we're stupid, that we're belong in an insane asylum. It's not pretty. This is quite a diversion from what we were talking about. But this is the animal magnetism that we do need to be aware of, and we need to handle, and you can't be blind to it. You must know. So this book, Brainwashing, it's very important. There's a lot in it. I won't read it all. I have at times read parts of it. But they're basically trying to wipe out Christianity. So let's not be asleep on that. Tony, did you want to say anything before I go on?
Well, no, I just appreciate, we do our best to speak the truth at all times. And it's not that this thought has not come up before, that, we're learning to place our trust and our faith in God. And there are so-called forces out there that would certainly not like that. You know, they want to be the deciding force. But sorry, not on our watch. Not on
Thank
our
you.
Watch.
Thank you. But we need to know what it is and how it operates. It's important. And Mrs. Eddy, believe me, she says it over and over. I was just reading in Miscellaneous Writings where she says teachers do not teach how to handle animal magnetism. She can't believe it. She said, if you've read my textbook, you know how important this is. Everyone wants to dwell on God as love, which we are today, but we also must be quite aware of what else is operating and prove its nothingness. We can go around and say it's nothing, but let's prove it. And we prove it by our work, by demonstrating over it, by knowing the allness of God. God's law is in three words, I am all. And also from knowing, yes, God's law reaches and destroys evil by virtue of the allness of God. Page 30.
You know, we could have a whole session on this, you know, at some point, and maybe we will. You know, maybe we do something just dedicated to this. Because, you know, in the back of the Eustace book, there's that very interesting story, right, where the man is, he's, before he accepts a position in the Navy, I believe it is, he must go to India and prove that he can withstand the mesmerist.
Yes.
It's fascinating. And I found a book when I was on vacation about the mesmerist and how, I'll use the word popular, this thinking and this type of occultism was back. It started before Mrs. Eddy's day, and it kind of reached a peak in 1920, 1930. But then it's kind of interesting. It's just gone completely quiet, very silent. We don't hear anything about it, but I believe that's by design.
I believe you're right.
I think it has new names too.
Yeah. Yes. So.
Isn't there another, it's not exactly the same thing, but there was something about error can't overcome a Bible reading nation. So
yes.
If you're, yeah.
John Adams, I said that, I think.
I thought it was
Daniel. It would be him.
It was Horace Greeley. But anyway, I know somebody's going to look it up and tell me. But hey, it was one of those, John Adams, Daniel Webster, or Horace Greeley.
Well, they all believed
it.
They all believed
it. It doesn't matter. But yes, it's absolutely true. You get the Bible in the hands of countries. And, you know, I've been knowing daily, because you think of how beautiful every nation is. Every nation, every culture is beautiful, God-given. The expressions of him, and
the people are beautiful.
They and to know they are under divine government, to know that daily, you know, they're free. The beautiful nation of China, the beautiful nation of Russia, the beautiful nation of North Korea, that have gone so dark under communism. We are to know this daily, and not just those countries, but other countries that need our prayers. Just to know simply that, because that's the truth. Every nation, beautiful, independent, free, and knowing this truth of and they do, as we talked about last week, everyone has this truth in their heart. So no one can be without it.
And those virtues are present. That's something, that's why I asked you for those articles. And they're free. You can find them on Epic Times. Just put a subscription in. You can do it for free and you can read those. But knowing that those virtues are automatically and freely part of God's expression, I mean, that's the trick. Is sometimes, you know, we're given so many images in our thought that would say these virtues are not present. And we can't, and that's the trick, You might see an example where their virtues aren't present, but that's the lie. We cannot accept that man is virtueless. That's the lie. You know, we have to assert that those virtues are present.
They are.
Across absolutely. All these nations, all the leaders, everyone.
Everyone, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And as someone said earlier, you know, you're the reflection of giving and doing good because God does it. Well, you are the reflection of these virtues and everyone, yes, everywhere. And to know this daily, these simple truths, and they are under divine government. Our country's under divine government. It cannot be corrupted. If we hold to the truth, we can bring it about. If you're constantly looking at everything that's wrong, you're part of the problem. So keep your thought clear and focused on the truth.
And it's the false belief when people look for life, truth, or intelligence in matter, is when they get mesmerized and they can't see the virtues that are there.
And that is why we're told, you know, Jesus beheld the perfect man. So we look past the false picture and see the perfect man. And in this perfect man, the Savior saw God's own likeness. And this correct view of man healed the sick. It also heals nations. It heals everything. Keep your vision.
It's really bearing.
Pardon me, go ahead.
No, it's bearing righteous judgment of your neighbor, of everyone, really. So.
Yes. And we must have righteous judgment. We're to judge no man except to see them as God's child.
Righteously, yeah.
This view is the correct view, regardless of all the arguments that would like to say, no, it's not. This is the correct view.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Now, just one other thing, or a couple other things. Carrie had sent a few very beautiful articles on the 91st Psalm, and one was about the holy habitation, and how, and we talk about this often, but we dwell in the secret place of the Most High. That is the holy habitation we live in, if we declare it and know it. And there's a quote by Ruskin who said, "To get peace, make yourselves nests of pleasant thoughts." So make yourself a nest of pleasant thoughts. Think on the enduring, the good, and the true. And in order to dwell in the house of the Lord forever, to dwell in that secret place of the Most High, you have to prepare yourself for it. It's a beautiful statement in the Bible where Jesus says this: when you prepare yourself, I will come unto you, right? He comes to you when you're ready to receive him. We can't go, oh, I'm a big mess, but I'm going to go seek you. No, we prepare our thought and he will come to us. And we prepare our thought by getting rid of all this negativity and fear and depression and welcome him in because he's there. And this thought, is what will heal homelessness and everything else. Everyone dwells in this secret place. And as we know it for ourselves, it doesn't matter where you live. You can live in a palace or a little tiny hut. You are dwellers in the secret place of the Most High if you know it. And that will change everything. This is your true sense of home, as Florence read in her prayer. And then there was one other article called True Courage, which makes an interesting point, and it's by one of my favorite guys, William McCracken. Mm-hmm. He says, no valid excuse for discouragement exists in God's universe. No element of failure, disappointment, or limitation can find lodgment therein. For harmony and spiritual satisfaction characterize his creation. Discouragement could only arise from a mistaken sense of the reality of evil. The admission that evil has power, law, being, force, or execution must necessarily discourage the pilgrim on the road from sense to soul. Whereas the spiritual perception of evil's essential unreality encourages the wayfarer to persevere and rejoice And then he brings out the peculiar case of the temporary discouragement of Elijah. And remember what Elijah had done, the cruse of oil that had failed, and the power of God to enable him to raise the sun, to conquer the priests of Baal. Yet when Jezebel, the wicked queen, sent a threatening message to him, he yielded to bitter discouragement and fled into the wilderness. Now it said, he who had braved the anger of Ahab, the perils of starvation, the presence of death, and the fanaticism of 450 prophets of Baal, quailed before the curse of an evil woman, and for a while was under the seeming spell of hypnotic sleep, oblivious of good and of his duty to God. Not until the still small voice came to his rescue did Elijah fully awaken and take up once more the work of divine prophecy. Now that's what we were just talking about, the communists, this mental hypnotism. He was able to overcome everything, but she worked on him mentally, obviously. The seeming spell of hypnotic sleep caused this great man to feel so discouraged he wanted to take his life. This is a warning. These Bible stories are very important. And then it behooves the practical Christian Scientist to guard against experiences similar to those of Elijah. He must learn to draw the line between truth and error, life and death, love and hate, or fear, so closely that the unreal cannot reach the real, nor the false the true in his experience. Elijah had delivered a telling stroke at the carnal mind. He had met and mastered the priests of idolatrous worship. In so doing, he incurred the displeasure of Jezebel, a woman of evil intent and revengeful character. The life of the faithful Christian Scientist is exposed to similar experiences, for it is his profession and career to help good uncover evil. When the latter seeks to disguise itself as good, and then to stand and see the fire of the Lord consume, make unreal the wood and the stones and the dust of material belief, thus reducing to evil non-entity. This process requires moral courage of a very high order, and discouragement would naturally attempt to palsy the hand and paralyze the intelligence, which annihilates evil. Just a warning, not to fear it, but to be aware of it. Don't be tricked by it. Watch your thought. Mrs. Eddy's articles and miscellany about, the progressive stages of error that would put you to sleep. So be awake and keep going. And if anything doesn't, go ahead, please.
No, remember to clad in the panoply of love, right?
Yes.
It cannot reach you.
Cannot. Yeah. As long as you're loving, expressing love, and all these qualities we've spoken about, it cannot reach you. All right, Gary, there's a beautiful testimony. It's a couple pages, but he's going to read, end it on this, that Carrie sent us. Thank you, Carrie.
Yeah, this is an article from the 1910 issue of the Sentinel, I guess. Entitled A Grateful Tribute by Eugenie Reeves. And she writes, in the 35th chapter of Isaiah, we read, quote, the wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose, end quote. In the midst of the isolation and solitude in which my son, now 15, and I live, alone on a prairie homestead, a mile or two from the nearest inhabited house, we have daily practical demonstration of the help and ever-presence of divine love, and thus the wilderness is made glad for us. We have been helped in every way. The privations to which we are subjected seem as nothing when we think of love's ever-presence, and we both agree that the former life of comparative luxury without Christian Science cannot in the least compare with the calm, the trust, the peace of mind, the faith, and the health of the present, although we are surrounded by what many would think to be roughness and poverty. In August of last year, my son was away, and in the evening, as I was watching for his return, I noticed heavy storm clouds coming from the south and bearing directly toward us. A 2-mile walk across the prairie during a thunderstorm would have been, to material sense, a dangerous experience. But I quieted my disturbed thought and realized the truth of our dear Lord's words, or our dear leader's words, quote, "His arm encircles me and mine and all," end quote, from Miscellaneous Writings, page 389. Very soon, the heavy clouds passed away to the eastward, and a few days afterward, we heard that it was a hailstorm and had done some damage elsewhere. Had it kept on the course it was taking when I first saw it, our little crop would have been wiped out. Again, at the season when prairie fires are so prevalent, there was one raging on three sides of us. The wind rose, and it seemed as if we must be burned out. I sat down and read aloud from Science and Health for a time. Then, as I arose and looked out of the window, I saw that the wind had changed and was blowing the fire away from us, and we were safe. This recalls the words of the 91st Psalm, quote, "Because thou hast made the Lord, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall no evil befall thee," end quote. We have also been wonderfully helped in the care and training of our animals. We got a yoke of oxen which turned out to be so wild that men were afraid of them. But with us, they were always gentle and quiet. A man whom I engaged to break them in was so rough with them that we took them in hand ourselves. And by treating them with the understanding gained in science of man's God-given dominion, we soon trained them to do any kind of work. But for a very long time, they would not let a stranger come near them. Of course, we were easily overcome the belief of fatigue, and health we recognize as a divinely bestowed quality, which we must reflect. Owing to the scarcity of hired laborers and our small means, we do all the work of this little farm ourselves, knowing that divine intelligence and strength are ours at all times. How beautiful and helpful is even our slight knowledge of Christian Science, making love well up in the heart of all one's fellow men. And how sincere and tender is the compassion we feel for those who will not admit this blessing to their lives. Day by day, the light grows clearer and brighter as it leads us into peace and guides us in all our thought and action. We reverently thank God and His messenger to this age, our leader, who has, through her piety and long-suffering, given us an example of true and faithful living.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
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 Thank you.